Well, hey, I'm excited to be here today as the guest. That's very weird. My name is Donna Balzer. I am the host of Helping Gardeners Grow, a brand new podcast, and I'm excited to be here with Robin, and Robin is going to interview me. How are you, Robin?
I'm great, and I am super excited to interview you today. It's going to be really neat for me and the listeners to learn some more about you, our lovely host.
Hello and welcome to Helping Gardeners Grow, the podcast. My name is Donna Balzer and I'm a horticulturist, a speaker, and an author and host of Home and Garden TV's Bugs and Blooms.
Hi, I'm Robin from the West Coast Gardener YouTube channel, and I am a master gardener in training and the producer of Helping Gardeners Grow. So Donna, tell me all about what even started you with gardening. How did you get into gardening?
Well, that's way too long a story. I was the kind of kid that was always in the garden, looking to pick strawberries, looking to pull carrots. I was just always there right beside my parents. They always had a garden. And when I was 17, I did a little test at, you know, school. You can do a little capabilities test or whatever. And I decided to go into forestry. That seemed like where I was, you know, aiming, where my interest was. So I signed up for that, went to like a few months of classes. Then I walked down a hallway, saw that sign that said horticulture department. And I thought, what in the world is this? This is at the University of Alberta. And I checked it out and it was exactly the same courses. In the first year was forestry. So I switched over that day and the rest is history. I have been in horticulture since I was 17 at university.
Wow. So what kind of experiences did you have when you were in horticulture school?
Oh, just everything from learning how to do landscape design to learning all about all the pests. We took a lot of courses on chemistry, soils, 4 courses on soils. Anyway, we really went into depth on everything. And in the summers, I worked at the university farm, as well as on the evenings and weekends working at maintaining people's gardens. So lots of weeding, lots of hands-on experience, that's for sure. Lots of pruning, lots of things that you wouldn't think you would normally learn in a university course, but because I was also working in the summers, I was also working in the greenhouses, watering just to make a little bit of extra money. Let's face it, I was a kid that was putting myself through school, so I had to do what I had to do, and it helped me learn just all kinds of interesting things. And then I had kids and I gardened with them and had a really fantastic job at the Calgary Zoo as the horticulturist there. Taught at college. I taught at Olds College. And then I thought, oh, people keep asking me to help them in their gardens, to help design. So I just went right independent, freelanced, and just went to help people directly. So I spent years and years and years doing that. And suddenly, 5 years ago, we moved from Calgary, where I had been based in Alberta for years and years, 30 years, we moved to Vancouver Island. And that was something I thought would be a lot easier. The climate is mild here. Everything makes sense that it would just be, that it would just grow. But in fact, I found out just the opposite. Everything that happens, happens in the soils. And of course, the soils out here, at least my particular soils. Well, I'm going to give you a clue, Robin. We're on Beach Road.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have very sandy soil. Mm-hmm. I have actually seen it in real life and you pick it up and it just falls through your fingertips.
I know. So you cannot, you know, on the prairies, you can put a seed in the ground. You can go away for a week. Like people regularly have these sort of gardens, these community gardens where you put something in the ground, you go away for a week, you come back, it is growing because it maybe rained overnight one time. And then you just kind of like weed it and carry on. Here, I tried that same thing. I planted a crop before we actually moved here, went away for 2-3 weeks thinking, wow, things are going to be crazy over there when I get there. And I got back and I had little tiny seedlings that were maybe 1/4 inch high. They just couldn't do anything. There was no moisture in the soil. And to compound that, all of the beds when I moved in were raised beds. And if you've already got dry, sandy soil and now you're raising it up and getting better drainage, well, just figure it out. There's not going to grow. So I had to relearn gardening on the West Coast for sure.
Yeah, that is definitely something I've heard from a lot of people who live closer to the beaches. Now, as you know, I live more in the mountains. So I have so much clay that it's a bit of a different story and a bit of a different struggle. But so what have you done to actually amend your soil so far?
Well, originally we started buying soil. When I built my big greenhouse, we bought soil for the greenhouse and we put that in. But even so, it starts to go. I mean, they're still supplying basically local soil. There is very little clay. So I ended up thinking we just can't buy soil for every square inch in our garden. And so I started building hugel cultures, which is mounds built out of the trees that we had to take off the land to put the greenhouse up. And I put those mounds in, and they are basically just piles of logs with finer materials, twigs, and then, of course, old compost, old straw, and topped up with an inch of soil. So it's sort of like an elaborate lasagna garden, but quite a bit bigger. The big ones I've seen online are up to 7 feet high. Mine were originally about 1.25 meters. That's about 4 feet. And they've kind of collapsed back down, and they're really almost flat now. But the soil is incredible. The plants are incredible, and it's been a really good success.
Yeah, that's a good way definitely to incorporate some organic material into the ground. Aside from the soil, any other big differences between gardening in Alberta and on Vancouver Island in BC?
Well, here on Vancouver Island, this is the country of endless spring. I mean, we have had blooms since January. First it was the witch hazel, then the snowdrops, now the crocus, and I see that the hyacinths are budding. And this will go on and on and on for months. Whereas in Alberta, spring might happen one day in May. I always remember when I worked at the zoo, I was also doing horticulture events, and we had planted 100,000 bulbs. We planned a huge event. We had the whole Dutch Canadian Club coming over. We had special foods available in the conservatory. It was a big event. The tulips were out of the ground. They were all in bud. I thought, wow, you know, this was all guesswork. When we planted those in the fall, we did not know that they were going to look this good on May 18th. It was just amazing. And then it snowed about 60 centimeters.
That sounds like Calgary.
So we canceled the event. You couldn't even get around. Most people couldn't even leave their homes. And as soon as that snow melted, it took 2 days. The tulips were still fine because the snow had been big and soft and fluffy and just kind of filled them up. They were fine with that. The snow melted. It was plus 30 degrees. The tulips came and went within a weekend. We couldn't even really plan a secondary event because they were finished now because it was too hot. Spring was done. We're now into summer. And that's the difference. We get these long, long springs on the coast, and we get sometimes on the prairies a very short spring, and then it's summer.
Yes, I've lived in both of those places as well. And yeah, it's pretty extreme. It's funny that you used to work at the zoo, because when I went there as a kid, I remember going to the indoor greenhouse and seeing banana trees for the first time. I couldn't believe that you could grow those in Canada.
I know. It was incredible. That conservatory at the Calgary Zoo, I think, kept a lot of mums alive. It kept a lot of, I brought my kids there all the time. Even before I worked there, I brought kids there. And just sitting in that humid environment in the middle of winter was just incredible. So I really was excited when they advertised that they needed a horticulturist. I'm like, what? They need a horticulturist? Because I'd been home with my kids for a few years and was starting to go a bit stir crazy, and was so excited because at the zoo we worked with perennial plants, we worked with tropicals, we worked with special plants around the animals. For instance, when you put a gorilla in their new enclosure, if you put out sod, those gorillas will roll up the sod. And they did. They would just roll it up and then throw it at each other. And this was ridiculous. How are we going to make a nice green enclosure for the gorillas? So we discovered that if we pre-germinated the grass seed with some sand in buckets, and it basically gave it a chance to start germinating, like you might do if you were making sprouts or microgreens at home. We did this for the grass, the lawn grass in the gorilla exhibit, put that out and kept them out of there for a couple of days. When they came out, there was nothing to roll up. They still could dig and play, but this grass had grown so fast. We had within a week a fully enclosed green area for the gorillas. So it was quite a challenging job. It wasn't just about, you know, growing tropicals. It was all kinds of things. Really interesting peony connections. Just before I started there, they had planted a whole collection of, oh, it must have been 60 kinds of peonies, which is, sounds like a lot, but actually there's 100 kinds of peonies, very many kinds. And they didn't bloom that first season I was there. And they all had their labels. They looked like they were going to be beautiful, but nothing was coming, no bloom. So then I had to research peonies. I thought, why is there not a single peony in bloom in this huge collection? This was all planted by gardeners before I came, but they're all qualified gardeners. And I researched it, and peonies have to be very close to the surface. So you have to have the little pink bud that's coming out of the roots just within an inch and a half of the soil surface. And if they're too deep, they will not bloom. And it seems very fussy, but we dug up every peony that second spring, moved it up higher, and the third spring, everything bloomed. So we felt quite vindicated. So everything from tropicals to perennials to testing of annual flowers, it was all fun and all interesting at the zoo.
Wow. As you know, a person who goes to places like that, you don't even really think about what goes into that kind of process. But that sounds like a real dream job.
Yeah, it was interesting. And so many staff, and I also had up to 60 volunteers at one time. And the volunteers would help us with things like evaluating the annual flowers. And I had very carefully chosen annual flowers because summer's so short in Calgary, you want to give some color. And I had ordered, I think, 50 or 60 different kinds of flowers, but just literally a day or two before they would arrive, and they were from various suppliers because some people will only grow what they've always grown. They won't grow a special variety. Other people would be a little more adventurous, and we would ask for maybe Liberty Snapdragons or something a little different. And just literally the week before these were all coming in, people would say, we ran out of that Cerise Queen Liberty Snapdragon or whatever it was called, but we're substituting it with the yellow Snapdragon. We're like, that wasn't our choice, but okay, what are we going to do? It's 2 days before we plant. Next person would phone, didn't have that pink zinnia. We substituted the yellow zinnia. And pretty soon, I'm not kidding, Robin, 90% of our display, the first year I designed it, was yellow. Everyone had substituted something yellow. And when I had my volunteers evaluate it, they're all like, a little too much yellow. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine too in Calgary because it's the landscape is almost kind of yellowy, you know, with all
true.
A lot of grass, you know, and in the summer in particular. So yeah, I can imagine that would have been a bit frustrating.
Light levels. People don't realize it, but Calgary's at the same elevation as Banff. So you're high. You're between 3,000 and 4,000 foot elevation. And Banff is a 3,200 foot elevation, the town site of Banff. So you're up there in the mountains when you're in Calgary. It's a high plateau. So you've got more UV light. And so yellow just glares at you. It's just glaring. We made a rule after that, no more than 20% yellow. That was ridiculous. If you're doing your landscape, you can't have more than 20% yellow, and maybe 10% white was the other thing, because white and yellow are both, they reflect too much light. And that was an early learning curve for me at the Calgary Zoo.
Wow, that's so interesting. And, you know, a lot of times people have said to me, I hate the winter in Calgary, but I love the light. So they actually prefer being there, even though it is so cold. To here, which is so much more temperate, but we have a lot more cloudy, rainy days and a lot less light, really.
Yeah, full sun on the island is really like a 7 or 8 hour day. If you see a book that says, oh, make sure this plant has full sun. Full sun in Calgary is 4 hours. That's all you need. If you've got a little pocket where you've got 4 hours of light, because it's such clear, clean light, it's really interesting.
Okay, so what are some of your favorite crops to grow on Vancouver Island, for instance?
Well, here, we were growing at a community garden, and we were growing on our balcony in Calgary, and we were growing, you know, in any way we could, really, everywhere and anywhere. But because we had a downtown house, really, we were limited because the big trees were really shading everything. So I was really excited to get out to the island. And, you know, when you're a gardener or a farmer, the first thing when you buy a piece of land is you make sure that it has a south-facing slope or a southeast so that that little bit of land just heats up first thing in the morning and brings life to your garden. Well, unfortunately, my husband bought this property without checking in with me, and it's a north-facing slope. So it's a very cold slope. So we're in a warm climate, but a cold location. So gradually, through building these beds, we've made it more level. But out here on the island, my goal, I decided, because we have so much more land, we decided our goal would be to grow more food. We bought a second greenhouse. we tried to make this north-facing sort of flat, at least, or almost south-facing. And we are growing everything here from figs to apples, raspberries, all our vegetables. We grow beautiful, beautiful vegetables. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun that way. And so I focused more here, not on the ornamentals, but on the edible foods.
And what are a couple of your favorite edibles to grow? I know you gave me a curry squash, which was delicious, and butternut. What else?
Every month has its own favorites. Right now it's microgreen season in Donna's house. We're still picking some late greens from the garden. I still have some bok choy. We're still eating. Last night we had the last of our carrots, and we're talking now at late February, right? Last night we had the last of our Brussels sprouts. And we are still eating onions, green onions from the greenhouse. So we have quite a bit on the go, but every month is different. So already our spinach right now that we planted last fall is up about 2 inches. So we'll be harvesting that in March. So March will be all about greens. And I'll still continue to grow the pea microgreens because I like them, but I'll also seed my peas outside because that, in this climate, it works great to put things like peas out very, very early. And then they produce when it's very early. So it's hard to pick a favorite. I guess that's what I'm saying. Every month it's something different. I think the thing we've really done well on Vancouver Island that I hadn't always done well with on the prairies is cauliflower. I've decided cauliflower takes about 4 months. You start it whenever, it doesn't matter when you start it, whether it's March indoors or whether it's April indoors or direct seeded in May, it always takes 4 months. And so we have been starting cauliflower. We still have one last cauliflower left in the greenhouse. And when that comes out, probably tonight or tomorrow, well, then we'll be starting more. And I started some a few weeks ago. So I think the cauliflowers are the most exceptional food that we've been able to grow here because they're just so delicious to have a whole row of gorgeous, full cauliflowers. It's just great.
Yeah, I think for me, I find that winter veggies, I think, are my favorite as much as I love walking through the garden in the summer. But it's just something so satisfying about having fresh food, fresh produce in the winter.
Mm-hmm. The other big thing there I should mention is that we just finished digging our potatoes.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. We grow a lot of potatoes in root pouches. And we just finished digging potatoes the other day. So we actually took them all in. We just decided that's it. We have to get these all dug. And because they do start to grow, they'll be starting to grow fairly soon if you don't get them out of the ground. So instead of really rotting or freezing, they just sort of start to grow and you get a new crop.
So when did you plant those ones?
Oh, we would have planted them all last summer. I've discovered that through chitting of potatoes, and that just means putting them on your windowsill, they will sprout but not get long sprouts. If you know what I mean, the big long sprouts, mm-hmm. you only get when they're in storage. So when you are growing potatoes, you set them all out in an area with good light. And I just line my windowsills with potatoes. And then I start planting them. I'll be starting to plant them late February in the greenhouse over heat, and I'll continue to plant them. Last year, the last potatoes I put in the ground were put in the ground in August. And some of those ones, that one was in a grow bag beside the house. So we ate that for Christmas this year. So it's a long season. You don't just pick a day, oh, we're planting potatoes. And that's another big difference with the prairies, right? You'll say, oh, May 24th, better plant our garden. And people will literally go out and do everything in one day. But here we stretch it out as much as we can because that allows you to have fresh produce all the time. For instance, there's no one day that you would plant lettuce. You would plant it probably every 2 weeks all summer.
So Donna, what are you doing now that is really exciting?
Well, you're listening to it, you're speaking, you're asking me, you are helping me produce a really amazing tool for gardeners. It's our new podcast. It's called Helping Gardeners Grow. And through that podcast, we are interviewing all kinds of really fascinating characters. I've talked to Dan, who rents, and so he grows his entire garden in his garage. I've spoken with Jane, who used to be a commercial greenhouse grower, growing living lettuce in Calgary and then in Salt Spring. And now she grows citrus. And we've talked to Melinda, who grows really the most expensive spice in the world. And we've talked to Khalid, who's in Montreal. So this has been really fun. This podcast idea is my excuse to talk to other gardeners and get those nitty gritty details. Khalid, for instance, has been big on Instagram. He has 96,000 followers. and he never tells you the whole story. He's like, oh, today we're planting strawberries on the farm. And then you have to kind of follow him and you find out little bits and pieces. So I got him to sit down in his office and we had the whole chat. So we got the whole story about how you can grow strawberries from start to finish in Montreal in rain gutters. And when I spoke with Dean, who is in Saskatchewan, I found out from start to finish how to grow blackberries, big, luscious, juicy blackberries in the coldest climate in Canada, near Regina. And that, you know, to me, Robin, that was just incredible. So we are finding these really great stories, and I'm so happy that we're able to share them. And I'm so happy if people sign up for our podcast. And I think we both love it. You've loved helping. You've been so fantastic.
Yes, I do love it. I think it's just so fun.
What was your first venture into gardening? Were you a childhood gardener as well?
A little bit. I had a small like mandarin plant when I was a kid in the Kootenays indoors, but I think I lost interest when I realized how small they were and that they didn't taste quite how I expected. But really, I think I actually started gardening more after I got married. And I think my first plant was just a basil plant. And it was just so nice to have that fresh basil that then I started planting tomatoes and just on our deck because I had little kids and that was all I could manage at the time. And I just started growing more and more and started planting vegetables. I mostly am interested in growing fruit and vegetables and a little bit of flowers here and there I love to see, but I find that, as you know, I'm a nurse, so I also really appreciate that it's a calm place to be where I can just collect myself and just be with nature. I feel my blood pressure going down when I'm out there and tasting things and smelling things and just sort of nurturing them, learning. I like to keep track of what is changing and growing well and not growing well. And I have your wonderful 3-year garden journal, which I started recording things in. So when I planted my onion seeds a couple of weeks ago, I recorded that in and my lavender. So I like to just see things how they go. I'm sort of scientific minded and what tweaks I can make here and there. So but like you, I do struggle a little bit with where I am located because I am on the north side of the mountain. So we lose our sun early in the day, it feels like, especially in the winter. Yeah. So I have to be really careful about where I plant things, what I plant and timing. The good thing is we do have good soil. Drainage can be a bit of an issue, but it certainly isn't over draining like your soil.
Right. Clay, I realize and really appreciate now that I'm not in Calgary, we had clay soil in Calgary. Now I realize it actually has a stickiness to it that holds on to the nutrients. And without clay, it's really hard to hold the food. And that's what's going to be transferred into your food. And I did not appreciate that before because I just thought about the sticky nature of the clay. I didn't think about how it was holding the minerals. So you're in that situation now. And what have you done to amend your soil, Robin?
I like to top dress with compost a lot. And I also, we've got a lot of wood chips, which will help kind of add a little bit more porosity to the soil, but it will still hold the water and nutrients well, which is really great. And I also like to use worm castings. So those are the things right now that I'm trying in my soil.
I was so excited about worms. I can't believe it. If I had been younger when I discovered worms 20 years ago, I would have said, that's it. I'm changing into a whole worm person. But instead, I tried to talk my daughter into it, and she has made it a whole part of her landscape business. Everybody gets worm castings in her business. And even when I talked to Dean in Saskatchewan, he said if he could afford it, he would have worm castings on every single grow bag that he uses. So they're a good thing. So you're off to races with that.
Does your daughter have worm bins?
She does, but she finds that the actual use, like the actual number of worm castings she needs, far exceeds what she can produce. So she also buys in extra castings and, you know, sells them to clients, uses them as a top dressing. Everybody just swears by worm castings. They're an amazing source of nitrogen, but they're also a good source of all those little microbes that can help your soil really get reestablished, because we disturb our soils so much. We push them around, we try to get them piled up in different ways, and we disturb them so much, and it's that microbe that really keeps the soils even and really develops them over time. Even with me using the Hugo culture, I'm depending on the microbes for my success, and a lot of that comes from that decomposition through the compost. And yeah, it's fantastic.
That is great.
I want to thank you, Robin, because the big moment for me was when you came on board, because you are so good with technology. So hard to teach an old dog new tricks, but I'm learning new tricks, and you are my puppy, and you've trained me to learn all kinds of new things and forced me.
Now, Donna, I wanted to mention how I actually discovered who you were, So I am a nurse, and I had a patient one day who was receiving an infusion, and she was reading this really neat looking garden book. And I asked her about it, and she said that she was at a garden course and that the lady putting on the course had written this book along with a man named Steve, and that this book was really wonderful and it had all sorts of great information. And so I went home and I looked it up, and eventually I got it in my hands, and it's such a wonderful book. And I was very excited to learn all of the wonderful tips you had. And then I started finding you on social media. And that's when I contacted you about doing the YouTube video we did together. But I wanted you to know that is actually how I found out who you are.
Well, that is so nice. Thank you, Rob. And I do a lot of lecturing. I do a lot of teaching. I have all kinds of different ranges of things that I teach, but it always gets back to food. I love to teach about food. And writing that book, No Guff Vegetable Gardening with Stephen Biggs, has been a really fun experience. I actually just heard that same comment just a few days ago. Someone had bought that book at a course and now came back for the journal because they're ready now to keep track of things. They know the basics. So thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome.
I think you'll find throughout this podcast, I'm asking every gardener what he uses for soil and how he manages his soil. The answers are different. Everyone has a different opinion. And I think that today is our gardening gold, is that with this podcast, you will always get something unique about soil, whether the grower is in California, Quebec, or Saskatchewan. There's always something to be said about soil. And I'm always digging in, literally, to try to find out what the secret is in the soil with the gardener that we're chatting with.
Yeah, and I think that it's good to note just that there is always hope when it comes to your soil. Mm-hmm. Because with you, you really have like the finest sand in your yard. And that's hard to grow in. But you have managed to work with it so that you can grow a lot of things. So there's always something that can be done. It just may take some time.
Mm-hmm. And we learned that from Cliff. It took him almost 20 years to get that perfect soil. And we know as individual gardeners, we might not have a 20-year window left, but it's sure worth a try. And by adding maybe the minerals that you need or the texture through the organic matter like you've done, eventually you'll get there.
That's right. So normally we would have a question, but this week I'm just going to encourage you to please email your questions to us at askdonna@donnabalzer.com, and we will read your question on the air and Donna will answer them.
All right, that should be lots of fun. I imagine we are international now, so we have that opportunity to get all kinds of crazy questions. Now, I just want to mention that every week the show is produced by you, Robin Buchanan, and you are the West Coast Gardener, and you have built from scratch a really successful YouTube channel. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I started my YouTube channel because I wanted to just sort of help encourage people to get out there and to garden, and that they don't necessarily have to go crazy just growing all sorts of things. They can do small or large or whatever, but just to get out there and to get growing. And I like to just chat about what I'm growing and offer a few tips and tricks. But yeah, you can find my YouTube channel, which is West Coast Gardener, or youtube.com/c/West Coast Gardener.
All right. Well, people should look for that. So if you want to support the show, please go to my website, donnabalzer.com, go to the shop and see if there's anything there that interests you, from books to biochar. We've got it all. And if you're looking for some extra gardening advice, we've got the No Guff Vegetable Gardening, as well as the 3-year Gardener's Gratitude Journal. A great way to keep track. If you are keeping track of your garden, you are going to know exactly what to do, not in 1 year, but over a 3-year period. It's just a great way to start following and tracking your own success. Music on this and every episode was written and produced and performed by Brennan Anderson.
Podcast produced by Robin Buchanan from West Coast Gardener YouTube channel. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you'd like to see the complete show notes, including all the links that were mentioned during this podcast, please go to the show notes on donnabalzer.com. That's donnabalzer.com. DonnaBalzer.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the shop, because that's what supports this podcast. Thank you so much.